Welcome to another episode of Hack Shack Talks, here with your boy Paul. Guest today is a San Antonio legend in his own mind. give you a little background. Our guest today is a local kid from San Antonio. Played football, baseball, just kind of an all-around athlete. The guy back in his day here in San Antonio, from what I hear, but I guess we'll find out. John Austin Emmons, man, welcome to the show, brother.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Thank you. Legend, I don't know about that, but some of the old teachers you talk to.
I mean, dude, everywhere I've gone and your name, this is a true story, everywhere I've gone and your name gets brought up, somebody always emphatically goes, dude, that dude was a monster in high school in football.
Big shout out to the 1990 offensive line graduating class at Marshall High School. You don't see it many times today, but my offensive line, my senior year of high school, averaged about 300 pounds.
Woo.
Right? So we had the big boys up front that moved some bodies and paved the way for me. But no, I ran off my good buddies. Butt cheek, tight end, Jonas Crafts, had a great career at UTEP and then with the Philadelphia Eagles after that. And so I found out wherever he was going and I grabbed some shirt and we're right behind him.
There you go. So like I said, local man, so take us through kind of your high school career. I know you went to San Antonio Marshall. Out of there, I know there was a stop at Wharton Junior College and there was a stop at UTEP and then a stop at Lamar. So I know you were a two-sport athlete, so kind of run us through first football at Marshall and then baseball at Marshall and then just kind of your career, high school through college.
Yeah, so finishing my junior year, I had a really good year football-wise and actually signed with Texas A&M University back in the day, R.C. Slocum.
Okay.
And went into my senior year kind of like, you know, like we got somewhere to go, we got somewhere to play, and senior year was kind of an afterthought. the long and the short of it, and it's not something I'm terribly proud of, that is something I speak about a lot to this day, was the academic side. I was convinced, right, my job is done. I've signed with Texas A&M University to be a running back after my junior year, my senior year. It was just in the way,
yeah,
so to speak. So, senior year, was all-state guy again, all-American my senior year, and grades come down the pipeline, and I remember sat in R.C. Slocum's office with academic advisors and everybody else, and start seeing the head scratches and the eyebrows up, and I was like, oh, no. So, long story short, after an unbelievably successful athletic career, my academics just weren't there, and that's something that I've owned from that moment till this day, being almost 40 years of age. So I had to go JUCO. I was a non-qualifier with the clearinghouse, so the only way I could transfer to Division I university was backtracking, if you will, going to a community college, junior college, getting 60 hours, getting my associate's degree, and that would allow me to transfer into a four-year university. But I got drafted, so I was like, phew. Right? I got drafted out of high school, 20th round by Seattle Mariners and Mr. Kyle Van Hook. And for whatever reason, I didn't go. Mm-hmm. I drug my feet, and it's a week before stool starts, my freshman year of college, and I had just had a stellar, you know, athletic career, and I got nowhere to go. I have nowhere to go to play ball. And so the gentleman that drafted me is like, if you're okay with it, I'm going to make some phone calls. And I was like, absolutely. So I picked up the phone one day. He's like, hey, I got good news. You're going to. And I was like, done. Right? But I ended up at Wharton County Junior College. I was there for 2 years. Once again, had a great career. My first year, I was a junior college All-American. Played in the junior college All-Star game at Baylor.
Everybody's there.
Yeah.
Junior college. Like, if you get to that All-Star game, everybody and their mom's there.
I still credit that game. Didn't play the best, but, I mean, as we all know, it's not always about the end result.
Yeah.
My second year of school, I went back to Wharton for my second year, and I was hurt early part of the year. Didn't play a whole heck of a lot. Well, going home that break for Christmas, I flew from Houston to El Paso, where I referenced him earlier, Jonas Kraft, my good buddy, was playing football at UTEP.
Big man.
So keep in mind, guys, Wharton County Junior College, we had two sports, baseball and rodeo. I mean, we are in a town of 87 people and a little mini mart of some sort and like a, you know, fried chicken shop. And that's about all we had. So when I went and visited Jonas in El Paso, I was like, man, like this is college. Like this is it. And so I had my heart set on going back and playing football. So went back for my second semester season at Wharton, and the best season I've had baseball-wise, right? Because I already knew. I mean, there's no pressure on me. I'm going to play football next year. Like, this baseball stuff, I got in there. You know, baseball looked like a softball coming in, and I had a great career there, but I had my heart set on going and playing football a year. So
gotcha.
Played a year of football at UTEP. Year's done, comes and goes. Had some great experience, returned kicks and punts. Played it at OU, played at Kentucky. But the itch was there for baseball. So the gentleman that drafted me, Kyle Van Hook, calls me one day and he's like, hey, are you going back to play football your senior year? And I was like, no, I think I want to play some baseball. I want to play some baseball. So he sends me a plane ticket, flies me from El Paso to Wolf Stadium here, San Antonio. And bear in mind, I haven't picked up a bat or a ball in 14 months. But I had obviously been, you know, conditioned through football and everything else. So long story short, they brought in a couple cross-checkers, take a look at me, and ran really well. Ran a lightning quick 60, fastest I've ever ran. That had good pop, you know, I was all over the place, and cannon arm felt great. I mean, I was completely rested. So what's next? You know, hey, Kyle's like, hey, go home, we'll call you. Well, in the meantime, I'm playing up in Austin in the Tillotson League, okay. Right? A lot of good athletes in that, right? Staying close to home. Think Big 12, Baylor, Texas A&M, Texas, all these kids that are playing here. Well, next night, I'm like, hey, do I go play in my game? He's like, yeah, go do it. I'm leading off. Roll with an inside pitch, leave my hand out over the plate, take a fastball, back of the hand, fracture two bones in my hand. And so, as you can imagine, I get back to the dugout, try to put my glove on, I can't get it on, and I'm furious. I know that I have a good shot at playing at the next level. And so 48 hours later, Kyle Van Hook calls me back. He's like, I got great news. I'm coming to see you. And I was like, whoa, hey, I got another call coming in, I'll call you right back. Opens the front door, and I got a cast on my hand. And he's like, what happened? You know, so we kind of go through the story, and he was there to give me an offer. He was there to give me a free agent, like, sign right there, and I'm on a plane the next morning offer. And in my head, gang, I had been playing football for a year. I hadn't picked up a bat or a ball, and I felt like walking into a minor league clubhouse, major league clubhouse, at that point would have been a detriment to me personally.
Yeah.
And the offer still stood. He's like, hey, you come rehab with some of the best in the world. And I just felt like that wasn't the best look for me. Showing up, I haven't played in a year. I got a cast in my hand. I can't instantly jump in and help. So so he sends me what they call a draft and follow to Lamar in Beaumont and playing for Jim Gilligan, world-class coach. So he picks up the phone. He's like, hey, I'm going to send you to Lamar. Draft and follow, guys, for those of you that aren't familiar.
Don't do it much anymore.
Right, you don't see it a whole heck of a lot anymore, but they would sign me, right, and say I became property of the Seattle Mariners after the completion of that next season.
Yep.
So we go out in the conference tournament. We make regionals. We're at Rice with Rice, Texas A&M, and Texas Southern. The day after that was over, we got bounced. Rice won it. Go figure. I was on a plane.
Yeah.
Like, I was on a plane to Peoria, Arizona, and kind of started my spring training career there.
Gotcha. So I've heard a story, and I want you to kind of confirm it, but I understand, kind of going back to high school, that you broke Priest Holmes' rushing record. And he came to see you. So kind of tell us, I love the story, but I want a clarification for the audience. Like, so kind of run us through that story of, and do you still hold that record, or are you aware of it?
Back in those days, gang, if you remembered that name, he was still going by probably Anthony Holmes.
Okay.
Right? He was Anthony Holmes there, and Got up at, I think Texas is when he went to UT, mm-hmm. right? Is when he kind of changed his name to Priest. But so my senior year, I ended up rushing for over 3,000 yards and like 53 touchdowns. And we're in the state quarters. And go figure, it was a district matchup. We lost two games my senior year.
Yeah.
Holmes in the regular season, then we got Holmes in the quarters as well. Well, I'm in. There's rumor through the locker room, right, that Priest is going to be on the sideline this game.
Yeah.
And he, we play the same position. He was a Marshall guy. I was a Marshall guy. I knew his name more so as I became more successful because people, you know, would just reference, be like, hey, did you know, like, you just topped Priest. And so when they said he was going to be on the sideline, I mean, you got to remember, I'm an 18-year-old kid. Like, you looked up to this, you pedestal this guy.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sitting in the locker room, and it's pretty quiet. Our routine was we'd go eat as a group and then, you know, get back to the locker room. People kind of fan out through the locker room, put your headphones on, right? Yeah. Sit down, take a shower, get your mind right.
You listen
right.
to your hype music.
All that stuff, right? Yeah. Some people want to be dead silent. Some people want, you know, Metallica on level 97. Me, I was a pretty cerebral guy. I wanted some quiet. I wanted to envision how the defense was going to try to line up and stop me. I wanted to envision our first 10 plays that were scripted, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Well, I'm in the locker room and I hear this like voice coming through, like, you know, I'm looking, hey, I'm looking for, y'all seen, where's this Emmons at? Hey, I'm looking for Emmons. And I'm getting excited because I know it's Priest, and I'm sitting at my locker and I tapped me on the shoulder. And I looked up over my shoulder and it was Priest Holmes. And he's like, hey man, I'm trying to find his Emmons with John Austin. And I was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, I'm like excited. I put my arms out to my side. I'm looking at him like, how can I help you? And he's like, help me out. Like, is he around here somewhere? And I'm like, and so finally I'm like, Priest, I'm like, my name is John Austin Emmons. I stick my hand out to meet him and his eyes get kind of big. And he was like, he looks at me kind of confused. And he said, wait a minute. And he said, I got to be completely honest with you, J.A. And he was like, I thought for sure I was going to come in here and you were going to be a black guy. And I just kind of chuckled. And he's like, no, I don't mean any disrespect that way and so on and so forth. But it was at the time, right, we had a pretty good chuckle about it because he was convinced. He was like, man, I'm a running back. He was like, ain't no white guy is running for that many numbers like breaking my record. So we had a good laugh about it, and I actually have a really good picture somewhere that I put one in the end zone that game and came back to the sideline, and like the first hand that I slapped was Priest.
Yeah.
So we ended up getting beat that game. He signed something. I took my shoe off. My parents have it. He signed my shoe, and that was really my last high school game that I ever played. But it was a – it was funny that people were convinced that just by looking at me, I was a linebacker or, you know, defensive end or something like that. But they were convinced I wasn't going to be back in the backfield getting 30 carries a game. So still something we kind of chuckle about.
So do you still hold that rushing record at Marshall? Do you know?
I do, yeah. As far as guys, if alumni up there, something, correct me if I'm wrong, but it would be news to me if I didn't. It would be news to me if I didn't. And I think some of those numbers still hold up, like in the top 10, like in Texas history as well.
Man, that's strong, strong. So let's fast forward back to takeoff. You get leave Lamar. We're heading to spring training. Kind of time framing this, I think like King Felix was there, Ichiro, those are some big names. Like kind of take us through that.
Yeah, so I remember the first thing that I remember to being like just kind of starstruck, like whoa, was getting to the complex. And for those of y'all, again, that are not terribly familiar, you kind of have two different complexes. You have a minor league complex and a major league complex, and these clubhouses kind of back up to each other. So you use some of the same entrances and exits, but inside, right, very two different were the two crowds. But I remember pulling up, and I'm getting out of we didn't have Uber or Airbnb Uber or Lyft or any of that stuff back there. So I'm in a blue super shuttle. Any of y'all have ever flown through the Phoenix area? and I pull up, and I remember seeing, like, this just mass of bodies, right? And they're, like, moving, like, in sync with each other. Well, the closer I get, it's Ichiro right in the middle of them. And these are reporters from his native Japan that like were on site, and their job was like cover each room. It was like 30 of them.
Anything he did?
Yeah, whatever he did. His lunch made the news over there, right? And but that was the first time that I was like, my heart picked up a little bit, and it was like, wow, like these are guys that you've seen on ESPN. You've seen like, you know, put a bat on anything. So that was the first moment for me to where I was like, you know, kind of starstruck, taken aback a little bit about some of the people that, I mean, I was really, for all intents and purposes, on the same team as now. So, and you referenced King Felix. My first at-bat, right, in that environment was against King Felix.
Monster.
And I'm sitting on the on-deck circle for the guys of y'all that have, you know, played ball before, and I'm trying to time these pitches up, and I'm, you know, getting my stride and loading up, and I'm like, huh? Starting to choke up a little bit on the on-deck circle, trying to choke up a little bit more. You know, my 33-inch bat turns into about a 28. And I remember stepping in the box for the first time, and he threw the right down Main Street, hit me if you can, fastball, right? Mm-hmm. And I just watched it. By the time a swing registered in my hand, the pitcher was already back in his hand. Next pitch, don't advise it for you players out there, but he's in the windup, and I'm like, I'm swinging.
No matter what.
I don't care where it is, right? I'm getting my money's worth. And he throws another one right down Main Street. I put bat on ball, but it doesn't leave the cage. It's dead right. It would have gone in the first base dugout more than likely.
You didn't break your bat, though, did you?
I didn't break my bat, thank God. And right after that, the catcher, who I don't remember from a ham sandwich, he starts jawing at me. And I'm down 0-2. And he's saying something to the effect of like, hey, hop back up. Or like, hey, you know, watch it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what? You know, I don't, like I said, my first at bat, I've been on campus for like maybe 36 hours.
Yeah.
And he throws this breaking ball that, guys, I kid you not, it starts out behind me. Like behind me. Righty on righty. And I bail out. I hit the deck, bat, drop my bat, everything. And this thing breaks right down the middle. Catcher never moves. Holds the ball, looks down at me. And I forget exactly what kind of choice words he had for me, but something to the effect of like, welcome, strike three. And I'll never forget that at bat. And I mean, of course, Felix goes on and has a world-class career. He throws a perfect game. He's a Cy Young guy.
Probably be in the Hall of Fame.
Unbelievable. But that was my first. And I remember going back to the dugout being like, holy, is this what it's like? Like, is this normal? And I remember Scott Steiny, if you're out there, my man, I love you. I miss you. I don't know if you're still in baseball or not. But he was our manager at Rookie Ball down there. And remember him coming over and patting me on the knee and says, they're not all like that. And I remember thinking like, thank God, because if that's what they're all like, I might want to call UTEP back and see if they need another, you know, running back.
Need a running back again?
Yes.
Let me circle back for the third time.
But yeah, it was the people that were amazing up there. Like I was always, the one thing I'll say about Ichiro is there was nobody that I ever saw that was more committed to his craft, right, and doing anything and everything that will support his on the field, whether that's nutrition, body work, pitch recognition, staying in the cages, top hand, bottom hand. It comes as no surprise that he had the career he did, because you're not going to outwork the guy. You just weren't going to outwork him.
How big really was he?
Like,
he's not a big dude, right?
If I had to remember, 5'8"-ish, but like watching BP, he was one of those guys that he was so good with his bat, as we all know. He'd stand up there and he's playing a video game. He's like right center, you know? Like, hey, fourth row, left field line, turns on it. Like, he was a wizard. Like, you might as well just give him the ball and let him throw it wherever he wants it.
That's strong.
Woo!
Man. And to be able to be there, right, and see it just for your own eyes, like that close, where most people don't get that opportunity, right, to see somebody of that caliber, much less King Felix throwing one at your head. and buckling your knees. You know what I mean?
That's something that I will take with me for, like, hey, King Felix, heard of him? Yeah, man.
Personally.
Yeah, 102 right by me.
Right.
So, great experience, but that was kind of my indoctrination to the next level, if you will.
Yeah. So how do you end up at... with the missions here in San Antonio? I mean, got to be pretty big opportunity, local kid, you know what I mean? That whole deal.
My first year, I play down in rookie ball. And I had a good year. You don't play all the time at that. You have a lot of big league guys down there rehabbing an injury. So you'll spend a lot of time developing. That's what we're trying to do, is take this kind of ball of clay, if you will, and mold that into exactly how you can help the organization. So we're leaving camp after my second year, and I'd had a great spring, like one of my better springs. And I was going to leave camp as the number one outfielder at High A, which would have been San Bernardino 66ers in California. So I was excited. As you, once again, gang, for those of you who don't know, typically at each level, you know, single A or low A, High A, double A, triple A on, they'll carry like four outfielders, and they'll have them 1 through 4. Well, I was going as the number one to San Bernardino. So I was excited. I was a two-hole
guy. You're playing every day.
Yeah. I'm playing every day. As you know, you would rather play rookie ball and play every day than be on a AAA roster, right? So I'm playing every day. I'm excited. I get called into the next day manager's office. This is like 3 days before we break camp. Mm-hmm. There's an injury at AA.
Oh.
So, right? Like, instantly my stomach kind of like dropped, and I remember he looked at me funny. He's like, "You're not excited." And I'm like, I am excited to go home to San Antonio, but I understand too the difference in being the first outfielder and the fourth outfielder. Yeah. So when I broke camp, of course it was bittersweet. I'm going home. I'm going to San Antonio. Like, I'm the first local guy to play at Wolf Stadium in front of your home. So that was amazing.
Yeah.
But I think ultimately, unfortunately, that was, and you don't understand the business of it then, but that was the start of the decline for me, because I didn't play every day.
Yeah.
Right? I became the fourth outfielder at double A. And so I ran a lot. I was a defensive specialist. I played almost every eighth and ninth inning. Right? You got a one-run game. You're going to put me in center field. Ran well. We're going to run balls down. We're going to play really good defense. Yep. You know, and so that was kind of my career at double A. And the number one comes back. You know, and so that automatically means a demotion for you. And that's the thing. I mean, you have to respect and understand the business side of it, or it'll never make sense to one of the players.
Yeah.
So, no, but playing in front of the home crowd, gang, that you come over to the shack. I got my first start at Midland. And I remember my parents weren't there. It was windy as hell. I remember going in the locker room and seeing the lineup and be like, double take? Like, what? Like, 6-hole playing right field? Come on.
Let's go.
And so I went 2 for 3 that night, right? I doubled and a single. We got beat 1-0. But that, for me, like, that was like the start, kind of like, we're doing it now. Yeah. So you come over to like where we're sitting at now, and you'll see that jersey on the wall. It's something I'm immensely proud of. The box score is attached to it. And that's something that I will cherish for a long time.
Yeah. So, was there ever a moment, like, you know, as athletes, we all have that moment of, whether it's high school, whether it's college, whether it's pro, like, damn, yeah, I can play this game. So did you have, when was that moment, and did you have that moment at some point in time, and when was it? Was it like high school, college, pros, where you were like, you know what, I do belong here?
Yeah, I think in high school, you have a pretty good idea, right? I mean, we know we're kind of... we're intelligent enough to look around the field and understand that maybe we're excelling a little bit more than some of our peers. But for me, I think mine was when I got to Wharton, it's still the next level of baseball. And for, once again, a lot of folks will go the JUCO route. A lot of really good pitchers as well, because they only want to be there a year. They want to hone some skills, and then they're going to the league after that. So we still ran into – Wharton was a terrible place to live, but it was a really good baseball conference.
Yeah.
And so I remember one game we were playing Alvin. I went 5 for 5. And it was one of those games, if you've ever played, the ball looks like a beach ball, right? And it was the first time that I had been like, I belong. I can do this. that I kind of knew, right, I might have a future in this.
That's awesome. So get released, right, or from the missions. Do you go right into fitness? I mean, you know, take us there. Like, how did you land to where we are now? For those that don't know, so John Austin is the director of strength and conditioning here at the Hack Shack. Has Bedlam CrossFit gym over off 1604 and what's the room?
1604 and Tradesman.
And we kind of came together, man, and this whole thing's been about a little over a 2 year thing in the making of just kind of Hack Shack and Bedlam and John Austin and I kind of coming together and creating our vision, which was just a one-stop shop for an athlete, right? So if you come to the Hack Shack and you're a baseball or softball player, you're coming here to, we're a one-stop shop. We got virtual reality. We got K-Vest that teaches you what your body's doing when you're swinging. We got Rapsodo for all your analytics. We've got strength and conditioning, the whole nine yards. So, I mean, this really was kind of a over two years in the making of us kind of putting this dream together. But tell us how you kind of came into the whole CrossFit and just fitness and wellness and all that stuff. Yeah. How did that become part of your life after playing ball and so forth?
So I when I got done with Double A San Antonio, I got sent down back to rookie ball when the number one guy came back. Mm-hmm. And I get called in one day and like, hey man, we're sending you to San Antonio. And I get really excited. I'm like smiling, like, hell yeah, I'm going back.
And no, you don't understand.
Yeah, unfortunately, the gentleman that was telling me this and handing me my plane ticket, like, I lived in San Antonio. Like, San Antonio missions were in San Antonio. So we were on different wavelengths. He's like, we're sending you home. And I thought we were going back to San Antonio.
Oh, gotcha.
So both were true, right? I was going home to San Antonio, but not the missions.
Not to play.
I was going home to mom and dad. So I remember sitting in my host family's 1987 Buick Cutlass in the parking lot at Peoria, Arizona, in the parking lot of the Seattle Mariners spring training home and crying for 90 minutes, being like, now what? That was the first time in my life I've been like, what am I going to do with my life? Yeah. Like, where do I go from here? Like, what is – and I wanted to hang on, so – when I came back, I got a gig with Nike, and I was doing team sales with Nike. So a bunch of like you guys, y'all, the Shaq would have been a primary call point where I'm like, hey, let me do you guys jersey, all Nike. I get Nike bats, gear, glove, outfit, yep, your whole team. And that was kind of what I was doing. And in doing that, right, I was doing one-on-one batting lessons, stuff like that from the kids. Whole different story, but when McAllister Park, about 8 or 10 years ago, went and won like in the College World Series.
Oh, when they went to the Little League
World Series. The Little League World Series, excuse me. A lot of those kids were mine at the time.
Oh,
those
really?
Were the kids that I was working with.
Okay.
Right? Well, one of the dads on that team, hey, I don't know what you're doing, but he was in orthopedics. And so that was, he said, hey, here's a video. Go home and watch it. If you can stomach it, I might have a gig for you. And it was in the operating room, right? I was working for a company called Stryker. And that's when I started.
Oh, okay.
And that was my first kind of peek under the hood, if you will, of like big time, maybe health, wellness, hospital systems, how doctors move through their days, how they see patients, how they bill insurance, how they do all of these things. And a lot of the common themes kept coming up. Preventative stuff was absolutely massive. And I remember being in surgery, talking to a bunch of docs, and this was, they're not in there by choice, but some of the choices they made led them to being in there.
Gotcha.
Right? In that same time, my mother and I, excuse me, about the same time, yeah, I met my now wife, and my mother-in-law had gotten sick. So she had a very nasty 8 month or so battle with pancreatic cancer. When she got sick, and our world as we knew it, if anybody out there has ever had a mother or a father get critically, critically ill, it stops you in your tracks. So there was an 8 month stretch to where my wife and I were trying to save her life. We didn't sleep in the same house. Like, we didn't do a lot of this stuff. But instantly when mom got sick, we knew our future wanted to be in like health, wellness. And if we can help some families not have to bury mom at 57, that was our life's mission at that point in time. So within a 3 week period, we lost my mother-in-law, Taysun. We had my first child, Luke Douglas. and we opened Bedlam, right? And it was an absolute nightmare at the time.
Yeah.
At the time. But to answer your question, in seeing orthopedics and seeing like a lot of these things, if we do the right things and, you know, early on, we can avoid it. And then seeing some of the stuff that my poor mother-in-law went through that ultimately, you know, cost her life, that it just became like we wanted to be an advocate. We wanted to go help people before it got there. And in essence, be, you know, proactive instead of reactive.
Yeah.
So we opened Bedlam 9 years ago in June. And it's been everything we wanted it to be and then some.
Yep. And then, like I said, I mean, me and John Austin kind of came together because me and his wife worked together way back in the day in Pecan Valley when she was slinging drinks on the beverage cart. And man, I remember calling one of my best friends, Clay, that was her manager and to this day one of my best friends. And he was like, hey, man, if you're looking for a strength and conditioning guy, call Jessica's husband. So that's how this kind of came together. But now come February 1st, we'll kind of officially open Bedlam Athletic Club. So kind of tell the people what's the difference between Bedlam CrossFit and what we're doing here at Bedlam Athletic Club.
Bedlam CrossFit Gang was born out of, right, the loss of our mother-in-law and sickness and these types of things. And we wanted that place to be like a refuge. We wanted that place to be a sanctuary, someplace you could go. And it was almost church, if you will, mm-hmm. right? It was less about the workouts and more about the people. It's these people can wrap their arms around you when life pushes back, when life gets nasty sometimes. And so we set out for Bedlam for twofold. A, to be a place, we needed a family at that point in time. We needed a community because we were reeling, we were going through hell.
Yep.
And so we needed a community of people to wrap their arms around us and love on us. And so when we opened it, right, that's who it was for and still who it's designed for, is anybody that just wants a little bit better for themselves, right? They want to work out, they want to do it in a group setting, they want to do it with people they love, they care about. That's what Bedlam CrossFit is for, our kind of OG location, like I said, that we started back in June of 2013. Now, Bedlam Athletic Club, right? This is more designed for the athlete that's probably going to be a next level athlete, if you will. Our main bread and butter is we make organizations better, gang. You come to us as an organization, i.e. the Hack Shack, say 18U team, right, that we have here. It does us good to get one of our outfielders better or our pitcher a little bit better. It does us a lot more good to take that whole organization now and say, look, guys, strength and conditioning, it's no longer an afterthought. It's no longer it comes after your throwing regimen, your hitting regimen, and then that. It's a necessity. It's just as important as the rest of that now. I think athletes, parents, everybody involved is witnessing that. So, but in doing so, much more hands-on here, especially the younger the population, the more involved I am, because we're cultivating, right, and we're putting them through moving pieces and teaching them how to move that's going to serve them well if we do it right for the rest of their life.
Yep.
So Bedlam Athletic Club, we come here to get better at our chosen sport. We take organizations and we make an organization better. We get the whole team in the strength and conditioning, we get the whole team in the cage, we get the whole team on the virtual reality. Collectively, the organization gets better.
Yeah. And I mean, our team is a perfect testament to it, right? So in 3 years, we've built a nationally recognized showcase team. And in the state, I think we finished last year 82 in the nation, 18 in the state. So, you know, I mean, and to me, not just level of coaching, but also adding that strength and conditioning component has been huge for us in the summer, just from a standpoint of you get in that June and July where it's 100 degrees. Our guys don't get tired when they're in that second game, third game, fourth game of the weekend, whatever. I mean, we're still good because we've done all the work in the weight room, as well as the work in the cages, the bullpens, et cetera, et cetera. So kind of for the younger kids, right? Like, at what age do you kind of think kids need to start doing some sort of movement in the gym? Not necessarily, I don't want, like, kind of go through, I don't want parents to think like, hey, we're in here and your 10-year-old is going to start getting underneath a bench with some plates and so forth, so forth. I know a lot of it's just getting the body moving, moving your own body weight, et cetera, learning how to be efficient with your own body. So at kind of what age do you see kids should start kind of looking, parents should start looking into some sort of strength and conditioning program here.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a little wiggle room in there, obviously, guys, yep. as everything. This isn't a hard and fast rule, but I think for most folks about the age of 10 is really, really good. And you brought up a good point, guys. I think it would be almost malpractice if I didn't say, we're not putting a barbell on your 10-year-old's back. We're not bench pressing, right, your 10-year-old. We are making sure they understand their own body, right, and how to move it efficiently and safely. That's really the goal at that point in time. As we get, as obviously as age increases and we progress, of course, so do the movements that we challenge them with. So, hell, Paul, we've had our 18U select team for strength and conditioning now for, what, 4 months?
Here.
4 months, yeah. Maybe, and we're just now introducing the barbell. I just now feel like they have done enough in a single leg fashion, core fashion, all the preventative stuff to even now introduce a barbell to them. So you're right. It at 10, we're understanding us, moving through us. Some kids are growing at that point in time. They're a little clunky, right? Feet are getting big, right? So at that point, we want to make sure that they understand who they are as an athlete and how to move that efficiently. We will never introduce external load if they can't move themselves the right way. So as parents, a lot of the issues are not so much skill related. It's just the bat, so to speak, swings the kid, yep. right? So a lot of this stuff, we're slaving away in the cage and then throwing programs and everything else, when I would argue if we kind of zoom out and take this 30,000 foot approach, like, where's the lowest hanging fruit? And a lot of times, guys, it's just getting that guy a little bit stronger, right? Making to where that bat, right? And there's a more of a contrast in the bat and his own personal weight. So important to know exactly the patient population and what exactly we're trying to do dependent on the age.
Gotcha. So you're seeing let's talk a little bit about a nutrition, right? You're seeing where the Dodgers are spending all kinds of money, from rookie ball all the way to the major leagues, and making sure nutrition is part of the equation, right? Not just the strength and conditioning. I mean, we're not just in the cage. We're also watching what we're taking in as well at the same time. So we're also going to provide that service here. It's in at the Hack Shack. So kind of go through that. And I know Jessica, your wife's going to kind of head that up for us. So talk about the importance of nutrition. I mean, we're not going to go into the gym for an hour and then go get McDonald's, right?
I sure hope not. Guys, nutrition for the longest time, and it kills me, people have just treated like it's optional. And guys, it cannot be further from the truth. You guys that are listening to this, parents of kids that are listening to this, that are moving, and you have them on the field two nights a week, and you have them in a cage one night a week, and you have them in the gym one night a week, I cannot even begin to let you know, guys, know how important it is, like fueling that is. Putting the right micronutrients in the body to help put them back together, right? That's what's gonna keep away these sore arms, sore elbows, and a lot of these stuff. A lot of times, it's just nutrition. We can't go out and put ourselves through the ringer and then go eat a bag of Fritos and slushy from 7-Eleven and think that we're gonna get the most bang for a buck doing that. So for me and my guys, like, you're gonna hear the nutrition spiel whether you like it or not. It's important, it's massively important, and you hit on it. These organizations are spending large sums of money because they finally realize, right, what an opportunity nutrition is and how we have not scratched that itch in a long time. So you mentioned my wife, right? Emmons Health and Performance. That's another kind of one of our gigs, where we take people on a completely one-on-one approach through health and wellness, completely tailored to you, your needs, your desires, goals, blood work, all of that kind of stuff. So in the same sense that we need to be in the gym now, the nutrition side, they go hand in hand, and it is absolutely not optional. That's something that, like I said, we will make sure that we are really hammering that point home.
No, I mean, good, man, it's made a difference for our kids. Like, I mean, and the proof is in the pudding, right? Like, so we've got, I think now 4 or 5 kids now that are
signed just this year in this 2021 class, excuse me, to go play college. Every one of those guys is in here Tuesday, Thursday, busting their butt. They're watching what they're eating. I mean, yeah, they might have a pizza or a burger here and there, but for most part overall, man, they're watching what they're eating.
Correct. We're human, guys, and I would advocate, like, you need to have that every now and again, right? Yeah. We're human, right? And we got to scratch that itch. It's just we have to be able to when you sit down and eat, guys, in closing on the nutrition talk, you have to look at whatever you're eating as doing one of two things for you. It's either A, promoting disease and dysfunction, or two, it's promoting, right, health, wellness, and everything else that goes with that. Like, that's really it. Like, so eating is a choice. Every time you're eating, it is a choice. You are doing one of two things. We are moving the ship forward, or we are putting some weight on it, right, and making it that much harder to move forward.
Gotcha. Well, man, it's been great. And kind of at the end of our segment, we always do a couple of, like, rapid-fire questions. So we're going to hit you with a couple.
Oh,
and,
boy, here we go.
And here you go. So first one, if you could go back and face any big league pitcher, who would that one guy be that you were just like, I would like to see that guy throwing at me? Aside from King Felix. We went through King Felix. Aside from King Felix, was there ever a guy that you were like, man, growing up, coming up through college, whatever, like, I'd really like to see that guy?
I don't know if I would really like to see him. It was just a massive respect. But for me, it was Nolan Ryan.
Oh, yeah.
It was Nolan.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. Like, when we put Robin Yount in the headlock and, like, that. For, you know what I'm saying? Like, so
you
absolutely.
You want to see that guy? Yeah. I want to see that guy.
I want Nolan, for sure. And, right. I mean, just to be able to, hey, maybe you put the bat on one and then to go tell your grandkids, like, you put the bat on one against Nolan? Come
well,
on.
Well, I mean, being able to tell your kids, number one, that you, like, were side elbow to elbow with Ichiro and
this is true.
King Felix dropping you is pretty good stories. Next one, if you could go back and change anything in your career, What would that be?
I would go back, and absolutely, unequivocally, 110%. I would go back to my sophomore year of high school, and I would go to class. Period. Yeah. I mean, we talked about that earlier. Yeah. I mean, you got to work pretty hard nowadays to be a non-qualifier with the clearinghouse.
Yeah.
So it would absolutely go back and set a better example, and that's something now, right, what we lack or we miss in our upbringing, we're much more conscious of. So my two sons, like, won't happen.
Yeah.
Won't happen.
So, if you get word that there's somebody that's going to break your record, rushing record at Marshall, would you go do a Priest Holmes and go visit him before?
Maybe, and I hope he wouldn't look at me like, "Who are you?" So, no, I keep up with local sports, and yeah, absolutely, man, because I know what an accomplishment and how that, whoever that individual was, I know how they would make them feel, and I would want to be there to support that for them. Absolutely.
That's awesome. Last one. So you got two boys, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've seen them in here, and they're both going to be crazy athletic.
Mm-hmm.
Will they be allowed to play football?
You know, right out of the gate, no. Like, I'm not crazy about it. That's a whole nother story, a whole nother talk for me.
That's part two. We'll come back.
That's part two. But,
another day.
Out of the gate, not quite yet. I'm hoping technology catches up from a helmet perspective. And until I can make him really understand the implications of beating that head over and over and over and over and over again, I can really make them understand.
Yep.
Then I think early on we'll probably hold off. That being said, my oldest one's playing 7-on-7 right now. Loves it. Like, we're, you know, learn the fundamentals, that kind of stuff. We'll wait to do the banging until later.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, we've been at tournaments, and I see these little kids playing full on pads, tackle, and I'm just like, wow. I don't understand it, but I mean.
I have plenty of buddies of mine now, I mean, nowadays, that their dads played. Once again, Jonas is a good example. Mm-hmm. That buried his dad a CTE, and he watched him kind of go crazy down the home stretch. And so we know now. The knowledge is out there. We know some of these things. Like, there's going to be a price to pay on the back end. So early on, to answer your question, not quite yet.
So I'm sure you might have heard, like, Manfred came out and said that everybody should expect, like, a full season, full spring training, the whole nine yards, right? Who do you pull for year in and year out? Do you got a team? Do you root for Seattle just because you were drafted by them?
I do. I root for Seattle and I root for Tampa Bay only because they both drafted me. They both, Tampa Bay wasted two picks on me. They wasted the 20th in 2000 and the 37th in 2002. So, yes.
So you're going to pull for the guys that had something, trying to invest something in you.
But for the longest time I did, for when I got out for 5 years or so, I had some really good buddies of mine that were still in the organization that, you know. Yeah. So a catcher of mine, Rob Johnson, you know, he Matt Tuiasosopo, you know, our kind of first and second draft picks when I was in. Matt comes from the name, you know, all them, and Rob caught Felix's, you know, game. So I root for those guys, but now as I'm getting a little bit older and I'm out of it, you know, more just, yeah, I don't watch a whole heck of a lot right now as busy as we are, but if I'm pulling for one, it's one of those two.
There you go. Well, man, Jay.
Until we get some of the kids from the Shack on one of those teams, then that will be.
We'll all be pulling for them.
Then that will be, you know, our team. So,
man, I appreciate you coming by, man. Great stuff. And, we got to do part two so we can get a little more into strength and conditioning, fitness, health and wellness, beating your head up against a wall with a helmet.
That's
and
right.
So forth. So, man, as always, we'll see you next week. Hack Shack, we out.